Hello and welcome to Rippercast, your podcast on Jack the Ripper and the Whitechapel murders. As we look forward to this year's East End Conference taking place 2 weeks from today, on the 11th and 12th of October in the heart of the East End of London, we're bringing to you six talks from the East End Conference of 2024. And this one is Philip Rotgers, Jack der Aufschlitzer, A German Perception of the Ripper Murders, from 1888 to today.
Presentation, and thanks for having me today. Welcome to my presentation titled Jack der Aufschlitzer, A German Perception of the Ripper Murders, from 1888 to today. My name is Philip Rotgers, and today I will take you through the fascinating world of how the infamous Jack the Ripper case was perceived in Germany, beginning with its initial coverage in 1888. I hope you're feeling refreshed after lunch. As many of you know, I am from Germany, hence the topic, and I apologize for my accent. I realize I'm the first speaker after the break, so I'll do my best to keep you all awake. And I originally promised to include some modern-day German interpretations of the Ripper case, but I found some quite interesting things back in 1888, so let's see how far we go today and how much time we have at the end. A little bit about myself. I'm a writer, a historian, and musician, and I'm always in search of London's spirit, whether on the streets or through conversations. And I've been fascinated by Jack the Ripper since I first googled his name at, I think, 16, maybe 14, maybe 15, I'm not quite sure. And it led me down a path into Ripperology and London history. And together with my mother, who's also here, Dorothee Schröder, I published, I'm from Germany, so it's all the other way around for me, sorry. I published the book on the left, Jack the Ripper, die Whitechapel-Morde 1888, eine Chronologie. As I said, I did it together with my mum. We published it last year, and it's one of the few native German books on the subject. And recently we also became German agents for the American author Bradley Harper. His work is on the right. It's originally called A Knife in the Fog. It's coming out in Germany as Dr. Doyle, Jack the Ripper, because it's about Arthur Conan Doyle involved in Hunt for Jack the Ripper. It's coming out in October, and it's translated by my mom into German. And we have established our own literary agency, Opera Scriptorium, which is the name in the middle. And if there are any interested authors here, I talked to one or two yesterday already, looking for an agent, please get in touch with us. So, that was the end. That was the end of my presentation. Thank you. All right. In 1888, the Whitechapel murders shook not only London, but also much of Europe. The German press, too, covered these events extensively, and it's this media coverage that forms the focus of my talk today. We will explore how German newspapers reported the Ripper murders, looking at the sensationalism, interpretations, and the vital role of foreign press coverage. We'll do this by going through the key events of the Autumn of Terror, in chronological order, examining the German press reports from that time. And please note, the articles today are just a selection of essays and articles. The dates you see on the slides reflect that many papers did not appear daily, so the articles may have different dates than the actual newspapers they are from. You'll see that when I come to these slides. I have translated the articles from German into English. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have just told you. I shouldn't have read the German version to you, right? It would have been quite an interesting talk for you. So I have translated that. So some may sound a bit strange due to the older version of the languages or the language used. And now we're setting the scene. So the Whitechapel murders began with a brutal killing. As you all know, it's nothing new for you, but as I said, I go through it in chronological order. With the brutal killing of Marianne Nichols, on August the 31st, 1888, the murder set off a wave of fear and speculation across London, and the brutality of the crime and the mystery surrounding the killer drew extensive media attention, including from German newspapers. Early theories included local suspicion of a figure known as Leather Apron, who was initially believed to be responsible for the killings, and that was also the case in German newspapers. So the first article I have for you is from the Hamburger Fremdenblatt. The Hamburger Fremdenblatt, so it's a newspaper from Hamburg, reported on September the 6th about the murder of Mary. I think it's going out, isn't it? All right, this is going to be interesting. Giving the German public their first glimpse into the Whitechapel horrors. So I'm going to read this to you. It says, "Mysterious murder, London, the 1st of September. A gruesome murder has been committed in Whitechapel, a neighborhood in East London. A police constable discovered a dead body with a gaping wound to her neck in a narrow alleyway in the neighborhood at around 4 a.m. on Friday. The body was taken to the nearest mortuary. The corpse also had wounds on her face and hands, which led to the assumption that a terrible struggle had taken place between the victim and her murderer. The gruesome deed must have been committed with a dagger or a long butcher's knife. The woman, aged 35 to 40, seems to have belonged to a class of prostitutes. A few weeks ago, a woman was murdered in a similar brutal manner in the same district, but the perpetrator has not yet been identified. There's also no trace of the perpetrator of the above-mentioned murder, who is believed to be a madman who wreaks havoc in the neighborhood at night. On the other hand, it is believed that the murderers belong to a class of thugs who make it their business to attack and rob defenseless women at night." So the article describes the gruesome nature of the crime in detail and speculates on the weapon used. And it also notes the possibility of the murderer being part of a gang targeting defenseless women, a theory that obviously was circulating in London at the time. So we'll move to the murder of Annie Chapman. As I said, it's just a selection of articles, so there was much more covering each murder. On September the 8th, 1888, the second murder took place, that of Annie Chapman. And the killing, it's intensified the fear in London and the media interest across Europe. And debates grew over how the motive and identity of the killer, with speculation that the murderer might possess anatomical knowledge due to the nature of the injuries. And just a few days later, on September the 12th, the Freisinnige Zeitung in Berlin ran a report on the murder of Annie Chapman. Another murder woman in London. No sooner has the mutilated body of the woman murdered about a fortnight ago in the Whitechapel district in the east end of London been consigned to the grave than another murder has been committed in the same neighborhood, the details of which surpass anything known in the annals of the criminal world. Once again, the victim is a woman allegedly involved in prostitution, aged around 45. The horribly mutilated body was discovered on Friday morning at about 4 o'clock in the backyard open to the street. As in the previous murder, the head was almost separated from the torso and the whole body had been slashed open. The heart and other organs had been torn out of the body and were found on the pavement at the site of the corpse. The present murder is the fourth in the same district within a few months, without the police having succeeded in identifying the perpetrator. A leather apron and a cobbler's knife are said to have been found near the body, leading to the suspicion of a man known by the nickname Leather Apron. However, it remains to be seen whether the maneuver was not intended to divert suspicion away from the real criminals. According to reports, one man has already been arrested on suspicion of the offense. So the article emphasizes the shocking brutality of the crime, with details that surpassed anything previously reported. It also introduced the leather apron theory, who was in Germany called Lederschürze, because that's the translation of leather apron. And the theory suggested a possible suspect, but hinted that this could be an attempt to mislead the investigation. And the Allgemeine Zeitung München, by September the 13th, reported on the arrest of a man suspected of being Leather Apron. So they said the man known by the nickname of Leather Apron, who was wanted in connection with the recent murder in Whitechapel, has been arrested. The suspicious individual has also been arrested in Gravesend, but whether the right man has been found remains to be seen. The police are, of course, extremely sparse in their press releases. So the newspaper also mentioned another arrest in Gravesend, and this was probably William Pickett. However, the article clearly reflects the uncertainty surrounding these developments, with the police keeping information sparse, a theme we'll see repeated as the investigation struggles to make progress. On September 17th, the Frankfurter Zeitung und Handelsblatt expressed frustration with the lack of progress in solving the Whitechapel murders. London, the 12th of September. The exposure of the mysterious murders committed in the borough of Whitechapel is, unfortunately, apparently making no progress. The Mosaic man named Pizer, who was suspected of being the peddler known as Leather Apron in Whitechapel, in whom the police suspected that Chapman's murderer, was released yesterday. The police have so far made no further arrests. So this article covered the release of John Pizer, who was thought to be Leather Apron, and this piece highlights how quickly suspicions were raised and discarded, showing how the investigation kept running into dead ends. So, let's look at how German newspapers covered the Whitechapel murders, because some station journalists in London to report directly, while others relied on translations of British reports. And a mix of original reporting and reinterpretation of facts occurred, often with errors introduced through telegrams, rapid communication and translation. And the speed of information combined with sensationalism sometimes led to misleading or exaggerated reports. On September the 14th, the Freisinnige Zeitung ran a detailed report on the rising tension in Whitechapel. The police are still baffled by the murders committed in Whitechapel, as reported in the BT. The BT is the Berliner Tageblatt, another Berlin newspaper from London. By Monday evening, four people had been arrested as suspects in the Chapman murder, but all but one had to be released because they turned out to be innocent. The excitement in Whitechapel is boundless. Fanatical voices have already been raised, blaming the poor Jewish population, therefore, for the crime, although there is not the slightest evidence to support such an assumption. The district is guarded day and night by hundreds of policemen and detectives, and each of the many lodging houses located there is closely watched. The man arrested in Gravesend has, of course, not yet been released, but is in good repute and has only become very degenerate through drink. He suffers from delirium tremens. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it in English, but you know what it is. The only suspicion against him are bloodstains on his shirt. On Monday evening, there was a meeting of the businessmen of Whitechapel who wished to offer a large reward for the apprehension of the murderers. Oh, sorry. Wrong one. So, not only were the police baffled, but the article also reflects the growing hostility towards the Jewish population in the area. And the tension between the public and the authorities was evident with mass meetings of business owners, as you all know, offering rewards for information leading to the arrest of the killer. So we come to the double event. September the 30th marked what is known as the double event, the murders of Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes on the same night. This escalated the panic in London, and the German press followed closely with reports of the brutality, misidentifications, and growing speculation, and public morale in the East End was shaken to its core, and the mystery of what Jack the Ripper began afterwards, because the name only was released afterwards, but the mystery of the Whitechapel murderer only deepened. So, the Allgemeine Zeitung München published an account of the double murder on October the 3rd. London, the 1st of October, new murders of women. Two female persons were again brutally murdered in the East End of London on Saturday night, and the perpetrator appears to be the same spectre in human form, by whose blood-dripping hand the four previous hideous murders were apparently committed. Like wildfire, the news of the two new bloody deeds spread through the whole neighborhood, and early in the morning, Berner Street and Mitre Square, as well as the adjoining streets, were filled with thousands of curious people. The whole of the East End was in a state of feverish excitement yesterday. The mysterious murderer seems to have disappeared without a trace, and the police are at a loss. There's only a short interval between the first and second murders, and there seems to be no doubt that the murderer proceeded to the second crime after failing to mutilate his first victim in the usual manner. So this article obviously describes the rapid spread of news and how it sparked feverish excitement throughout the East End, and the murderer seemed to disappear without a trace after each killing, and this further fueled public frustration with the police's inability to catch him. On October the 2nd, the Berliner Tageblatt published a similar report emphasizing the lack of police success. There is still no end to the bloodshed in London. On Sunday night, two women were once again murdered in a gruesome manner at two remote points in the east end of London, apparently by the same person who carried out the earlier murders in this part of the city. One of the bodies was horribly mutilated. The victims are, as reported in the Vossische Zeitung, another newspaper, again women of bad reputation. There's no trace of the perpetrator. There's great excitement in Whitechapel. The police are completely at a loss. So, this article stresses the gruesome nature of the crimes and the victimization of women from the most vulnerable sections of society. And this narrative of helplessness, both from the police and the victims, was a recurring theme in the German press. The Allgemeine Zeitung München reported on the 6th of October with a significant error. They misidentified Elizabeth Stride as Elizabeth Watts, a divorced woman from Bath, although this was, of course, not exclusively a German thing. So, London, the 3rd of October, the coroner's inquest continued yesterday into the female murdered in Berners Street, Commercial Road, on Saturday night, has brought to light nothing new concerning this crime, except the fact that the murdered woman was identified by her sister as Elizabeth Watts, not Stride, the divorced wife of a wealthy wine merchant in Bath. In the East End, the murdered woman was known by the nickname Long Liz. Her husband had left her 8 years earlier because of her infidelity and drunkenness, and in London she was gradually sinking. Your TV will be turned off in 1 minute. What do I have to do? Who's going to, Adam, come to my rescue, please? I have 1 minute to finish my presentation. Keep going. All right, thank you. Her husband had left her 8 years earlier because of her infidelity and drunkenness, and in London she was gradually sinking from strength to strength. She was 39 years old. And this article also appeared in the Berliner Tageblatt on October the 5th and in several other newspapers in the same newspapers. So this misidentification was not unique. Many newspapers, both in Britain and abroad, struggled to confirm the victim identities as speculation ran wild, and this was something that happened, this case with Elizabeth Watts was something that happened during the inquest into Elizabeth Stride's death, so this was nothing that only happened in German newspapers. Anyway, the German press relied on British sources, sometimes compounded these errors. A case study. So when examining the W event, we see a wide variety of reports across different German newspapers, confusion over victim identities, translation errors from British sources, and speculation about the killer's motives and anatomical knowledge all played a part in shaping public perception. In many cases, the rapid spread of information through telegrams led to exaggeration and misinformation, as we see in the next case. On October the 3rd, the Berliner Tageblatt published a report via telegram about the discovery of another female corpse in West London missing its head. So, London the 2nd of October, private telegram from the Berliner Tageblatt. In the afternoon, another female corpse with a head missing was found on Thames Quay in the West End. Sorry. The women armed themselves on their way out at a late hour. So this added to the general chaos and fear gripping the city, as the public believed the Ripper was extending his reach. And while this body turned out to be unrelated, it shows how any gruesome discovery was quickly linked to the Whitechapel murder in the media. And this was probably, this was the one found at the Scotland Yard building site. And Susie Huntington's the expert on this. On these murders. Okay, so as October continued, the search for Jack the Ripper intensified. He had gotten his name by that point. The infamous Dear Boss letter and the saucy Jackie postcard became central to the media frenzy, further fueling the public sphere. And these letters, supposedly written by the Ripper, mocked the police for their failure to catch him. And while many new leads turned out to be hoaxes, the press eagerly followed every development, often with sensationalist headlines. On October the 11th, the Allgemeine Zeitung München reported on the chaos in Whitechapel, detailing the police's responses to the threats in the Dear Boss letter. London, October the 8th, the perpetrator of the recent horrific murders of women in East London has still not been discovered. At the end of last week, the police received all sorts of threatening letters signed Jack the Ripper, in which the writer mocked the incompetence of the police and announced that he would continue his murderous work on Saturday night. Although the police attach no importance to these threatening letters and regard them more as stupid jokes than anything else, they nevertheless considered it appropriate to take extraordinary precautions in the east of the capital and in the city centre to prevent, if possible, a repetition of the atrocious murders. Not only were the police force in the Whitechapel district considerably increased, but numerous detectives and the officers of the vigilance committees, for the most part stout, resolute men, roamed the labyrinth of notorious and ill-lit byways, alleys and squares of the extensive district throughout the night. In his report to the Home Secretary, the police commissioner emphasized that the rapid expansion of the capital and the growth of its population made it imperative to strengthen the police force. And now we come to the brutal murder of Mary Jane Kelly. On the 9th of October, oh sorry, I forgot something. Let's just get back to this one, sorry. So, although the police was skeptical about the authenticity of the letter, they still took extraordinary precautions to prevent further murders. And, for example, this article reflects this sense of unease in London with high activities, okay, in the labyrinthine streets of the East End, where detectives and vigilance committees roamed the area in search of the elusive killer. And now we come to the grisly murder of Mary Jane Kelly. On November the 9th, 1888, it marked the Ripper's final and most horrifying crime. And the German press, like its British counterparts, was quick to report on the gruesome details. The violence of this murder surpassed all previous cases, with sensationalist articles and misinformation spreading rapidly. Public reaction reached a fever pitch, with fear gripping the East End more than ever. The Coburger Zeitung published a report on November the 13th, just days after the murder of Mary Jane Kelly. London, the 9th of November. A sad shadow was cast over the Lord Mayor's festival today by the news that a murder had been committed in Spitalfields between 10 and 11 o'clock this morning, the details of which are more horrible than those of the ghastly atrocities recently committed in Whitechapel. The victim, an unfortunate 21-year-old female named Mary Ann Kelly, was found in a lodging house in Dorset Court near Commercial Road. Her head was a completely unrelated murder. Yeah. Her head was almost severed from her torso, the flesh torn from her face, her breasts, nose and ears cut off, and her abdomen mutilated in a manner similar to previous cases. The police have not yet found the murderer. The article emphasizes the sheer brutality of the crime, describing the mutilation in explicit detail. The report, like many others, captured the horror that pervaded London during this time, casting a shadow over events such as the Lord Mayor's Day festivities, but also it includes a lot of errors. On November the 11th, the Allgemeine Zeitung München offered another account of the Kelly murder, falsely reporting about several details. So, London the 10th of November, the new murder in Whitechapel. There can be little doubt that the grisly murder committed again yesterday morning in Whitechapel, under exactly the same circumstances as before, was the work of the same monster who has for weeks been terrorizing the East End of London now. The scene of yesterday's crime is not 200 yards from Hanbury Street where Nichols was killed. The one murdered yesterday was an Irish woman, 23 or 24 years of age, and lived with a coal man named Kelly, who passed her off as his wife. Like most wenches of her class, she was heavily addicted to drink and went by the derisive name of Ginger. She occupied a furnished room in Dorset Street to which the entrance of Miller's Court led. The horse was rented by a grocer named McCarthy. As reported, the neck, nose, ears and breasts had been cut off and the body cut open. The mutilated body was packed in a box and taken to the morgue in Shoreditch, where the coroner's inquest was held. Remarkably, it was noted by the doctors present that, contrary to previous murders, no part of the body was missing. The murdered woman's lover, Kelly, had nothing to do with the crime. On Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock, he had visited Kelly, with whom he had quarreled, but had been living in New Street for 10 to 12 days, where the police found him yesterday senselessly drunk in bed. There's still a great deal of uncertainty about the time of the murder, and the accounts of her unhappy, frightened sisters differ greatly. When was Kelly last seen, and with whom? A Mrs. Kennedy, who lived opposite her, stated that she saw the murdered woman standing in a nearby Britannia pub at 3 o'clock on Friday morning with three young men, one of whom she described. Between 3:30 and 4 o'clock, she heard the call, "Murder!" But it was not repeated, she paid no further attention to it. Others say that they saw Kelly shopping for groceries at 8 o'clock and that they were still drinking with her in the Britannia pub at 10 o'clock. A loose skirt was found in the murdered woman's room, but whether it was left behind by one of Kelly's lovers or who else it belongs to has not yet been established. The police have now made two arrests in connection with the crime. However, both suspects had to be released as innocent. Jack the Ripper has also made himself heard from again and announced in a letter to the police that he will resume his activities this evening in the Marylebone district, where he has already noted down two women for his purposes. Of course, little attention is paid to the letter, even though the police take some precautions in response. The excitement in Whitechapel knows hardly any bounds. The Vigilance Committee, which has been weary of late, will redouble its activity, and the Home Secretary, Matthews, has been induced, for better or worse, to promise pardon to any accomplices of the murderer if they give information to the authorities, which will lead to the apprehension of the fiend. So, as I said, forcefully reporting about several details, and these errors highlight how quickly misinformation spread. Maybe they aren't even wrong, who knows? Even across national borders, and like the English press, German newspapers struggle to provide accurate details amidst the chaos. So another case study. In the case of Mary Jane Kelly, we see how German newspapers relied heavily on British sources, often translating articles directly. Errors in these translations were common, and also, for example, the use of bloodhounds was reported again and again, although they weren't on the crime scene or used afterwards. Despite the inaccuracies, these reports demonstrate the German public's deep interest in the case and their reliance on British journalism to follow the unfolding events. And for example, the errors that we read about just now, so Mary Ann Kelly and her lover's name was Kelly, things like that, they all appeared in the Times too, so the German reports relied heavily on that. So, even after the Ripper murders stopped, fear and speculation continued to dominate public discourse. The press reported on various suspects and theories, most of which were later disproved. One significant event was the resignation of Sir Charles Warren as police commissioner, an indication of how much pressure the police were under to solve the case. The failure to capture Jack the Ripper left a deep sense of frustration both in London and in the German-speaking world. On November the 14th, the Berliner Tageblatt reported on the resignation of Sir Charles Warren, marking a crisis within the London police force. The London Police Patrol. There was a time when London's police force was rightly regarded as the best in the world. Recently, this is no longer the case, as English voices themselves have repeatedly emitted over the last few years. Now, as a result of the gruesome, mysterious murders of women, which have kept the whole of London in a state of anxious excitement for 2 months, a crisis has suddenly arisen in the police administration, which within a few days has led to the resignation of the Commissioner of Police, Mr. Warren, and the head of the secret police, Mr. Monroe. So this article reflects the disappointment in Warren's leadership and hinted at the broader crisis in British law enforcement, and many in the press, both in Britain and abroad, viewed his resignation as an admission of failure to solve the murders. In a report dated November 18th, the Allgemeine Zeitung München recounted the testimony of George Hutchinson, a witness in the Kelly case. London, the 15th of November. In reference to the recent murder of a woman in Whitechapel, the following information has been given to the police by a labourer named George Hutchinson. Hutchinson, who was walking along Commercial Street, Whitechapel, on the night of Thursday to Friday, about 2 o'clock in the morning, returning from the country, met Kelly, whom he knew personally. A few minutes later, he saw her in the company of a well-dressed man with whom she went to her lodgings. According to Hutchinson's personal description, the man is about 5 feet 6 inches high and about 34 or 35 years of age, of dark complexion with a dark, strong moustache, the ends of which were curved. He wore a long astrakhan calabresa pressed deep into his forehead and had quite the apparent appearance of a foreigner. So this article emphasizes the growing fear in the East End. Tensions were running high. Innocent people were frequently accused of being the Ripper. And of course, Hutchinson's detailed description of a well-dressed man seen with Kelly shortly before her murder sparked renewed interest in the investigation, although it ultimately led nowhere. Oh, sorry, wrong direction once again. Comparative analysis. So when comparing German newspapers, we see different perspectives on the same events. For example, the Allgemeine Zeitung München focused more on detailed crime scene reports, while the Freisinnige Zeitung from Berlin was more concerned with the social context and public reaction. And these differences reflect not only editorial priorities, but also the political alignment of the newspapers, with liberal papers often being more critical of British authorities. So there are several recurring themes. Once again, several recurring themes in German press coverage of the Whitechapel murders: sensationalism, misinformation, criticism of British authorities, and social comments on poverty and crime in the East End. Sensationalist details like those surrounding the leather apron suspect dominated the headlines. Misinformation, such as the misidentification of victims, was rampant. And finally, the German press often criticized the inefficiency of the London police, with Sir Charles Warren frequently singled out for blame. And I thought this was it. But then, just when I thought my research had come to an end and I thought this is going to make a nice presentation where some of you will fall asleep, a new development occurred. In early December of 1888, German newspapers reported on the arrest of a Polish Jew in the East End of London, believed to be Jack the Ripper. So it says, it's just a one-sentence article, it says in the East End of London a Polish Jew was arrested under suspicion of being the Whitechapel murderer, and this arrest was noted in several publications, including the Solinger Kreis, Intelligenzblatt, Hamburgischer Korrespondent, and the Bonner Tageblatt. And you see it started from the 3rd of December, and it was reported in the other newspapers on the following days up to the 6th of December. So, in the first week of December, several German newspapers reported the arrest of a Polish Jew in the East End under suspicion of being Jack the Ripper. And I think they may have picked up the story of a Polish Jew arrested in Mile End under suspicion of being the Ripper, because some English newspapers reported similar details, and they may have been the source for the German newspapers. They noted that the suspect was behaving suspiciously, asking a photographer for pictures and making remarks that led to his arrest. But despite the initial excitement, no further information surfaced, and the story faded from the headlines. So, let's dive into the details of the arrest. The man described as a Polish Jew was detained at the Crystal Tavern on Burdock Road, Mile End. And according to reports, he had approached a woman and a photographer using language that raised suspicion. Initially giving the name Mr. Stewart and later Eva, he was handed over to the police. And despite his arrest, little more was heard about him, and the case remains a mystery. So was he simply a victim of fear and suspicion, or was there more to this story? At first I thought this man was Joseph Isaacs. On December the 6th, Joseph Isaacs, a Polish Jewish cigar maker, was arrested. Isaacs, born in 1858, had been living in Spitalfields and was suspected of theft. His landlady reported him to the police due to his strange behavior, including pacing his room and frequently changing clothes. Inspector Eberlein, believing Isaacs fit the description of George Hutchinson's suspect, initially thought they had finally captured the Ripper. At least he was said to have said, "Keep this quiet, we have got the right man at last." However, after further investigation, Isaacs was only charged with stealing a watch and the police dismissed him as a suspect. So the Polish Jew from the newspaper articles can't have been him. The date is wrong. His arrest was a few days later than the newspaper reports, and also the circumstances of his arrest was different. And also some German newspapers also reported about Isaacs, so there was a distinction between him and the Polish Jew earlier in December. So, the mysterious Polish Jew, who is he? This leads us to one crucial question. Who was the Polish Jew arrested in early December 1888? Despite the excitement surrounding his capture, no further information about him ever emerged, at least to my knowledge. I think some may disagree. I'm happy to hear that. Was he released without a charge, or did the police simply lose track of him? His identity remains unknown. The arrest, however, highlights the atmosphere of fear and suspicion in the East End at the time, as well as the role of the media played in amplifying each new potential lead. So was he just another innocent man caught in the Ripper hysteria, or could he have been connected to the murders? Maybe some of you know, or maybe I, you know, started something where someone would like to investigate further. So that concludes my presentation on Jack der Aufschlitzer, a German perception of the Ripper murders from 1888. I left out the two today because I stuck with 1888. I was stuck in 1888. I didn't go any further. Maybe there's some time to, if someone is interested, I can say a bit about how it is perceived today. In the question section, if there are any questions. So I hope this journey through the German press and its portrayal of the Whitechapel murders has provided some new insights into the case for you, and thank you for your attention. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip.
Ruby straight away.
There are questions.
Ideally in German, please, Ruby.
Yes, please. I'm only going to answer in German. So.
Yes, sorry about that then. I can't speak German. But
Not yet, Ruby.
Do the Germans perceive the Jack the Ripper murders today?
So, mostly through fiction, through. Like a couple of years ago, there was a movie made for German television about the Ripper, which was really, really terrible. Katja, she knows exactly which one I'm talking about. I'm just going to say it was really terrible. But that was something that was praised quite a lot by the critics in Germany. It's more about a woman coming from Germany to the East End to find her. I think her brother's supposed to be a character based on Aaron Kosminski, and then she finds out who the Ripper is. And it was praised by the critics as being a very good movie, and I thought, this is just shit. As most of you will probably agree if you ever have the pleasure of seeing this work. Apart from that, some books have been translated into German, but mostly books like Patricia Cornwell or Heli Rubenhold. So that's why we wrote our book, because there was a bit missing on the German market. Just the facts, so like Paul Beck's The Facts, but not, you know, just a smaller version for the German audiences. So if you'd ask, they know the name Jack the Ripper, of course they do, but they mostly know, they probably can't differentiate if he was a legend or if he really existed, similar to Sherlock Holmes, where some people think he really existed, but of course he didn't. So that's probably the German view today on the case, or the river.
Yeah, Jonathan.
Obviously, I've not read your book because I can't read in German, but
sure.
What's your personal take on the murders? So obviously, you've alluded to also the Jewish suspect at the end there. Do you concur with that theory and thought, or have you got your own ideas?
I don't have any own ideas, but I just found this interesting. That's why I picked it out, because I stumbled across these articles and they all said Polish Jew arrested in Whitechapel, and I didn't read anything after that, and I thought, okay, this is interesting, because obviously, well, realistically it tends to be more of the Polish Jew theory than, for example, Walter Sickert or whoever you would like to pick. So I thought this was quite interesting. Personally, I don't have a you know, a favorite or whatever you would call it. I have a kind of profile in mind. I believe he must have been from the area. Was a maid, he must have been from the area. But I don't have a certain person in mind that I pick out. And I'd like to keep it that way, because I think that's part of the mystery, isn't it? We all want to find out in some way who was the Ripper or who wasn't, but if we'd find out, the mystery would be gone. So, I don't want to find out who it was.
Very true.
The only question I've got to you is, when are we going to read your book in English?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. No, probably.
Read it in German. I don't
want to read it in German. Probably not. Probably not. Well, I don't know. There would be nothing new for you. There would be nothing new for those who know the case. So, because you have experts like Paul who published their books. So it wouldn't really add anything new or something new to the existing books in English. So we don't have any plans. But you never know.
What audio book?
I was thinking of that. Well, yeah. German version first. Maybe. Well, that's because it's quite easy to just, you know. But perhaps an audio version in English, that could work, yeah. Why not?
I'm not putting myself forward for that.
I think I find a character for you.
Thank you very much. I really don't want to know. My Norbert wants to get to.
I'm always here.
Did the German press focus solely on the Canonical Five, or were they? Did they speak about the other victims?
They did mostly on the Canonical Five. There was also reporting on Rose Mallet, for instance, because it was so close chronologically to the rest of the murders. I didn't find anything about, for example, for Martha Tavrim or Emma Smith, because there wasn't. Probably not worth an article in German newspapers, but once they realized what happened here after the murder of Polly Nichols, they began reporting in detail. I think there was once, another when Francis Coles was murdered, then more articles came to you during this time, because this was obviously quite a big thing that back then. I think they mentioned every murder after Mary Kelly, more or less, but the focus was, you know, the highlight really was the Autumn of Terror and then the Canonical Five. So, yeah, that was, yeah, that's the answer.
What's it?
I don't know if that might cross a line somewhere, but I would like to know, did the German press report on similar murders maybe in Germany? Because I think it was very exciting and interesting to report on murders in faraway places, but reporting on murders in Germany might be regarded as some criticism on the authorities. Or,
that's right, yes.
How far did censorship play a role in that case? Do you know about that?
That wasn't my focus, so I didn't really focus on that, but I think they did. So if there were similar murders, they reported about them. But as I didn't really look into them, I don't know how they reported about them. So that would be something else to look into. And what I found interesting was that, for example, there were some Ripper letters sent to the police in Berlin. And they were hoaxed, probably. But, of course, the German newspapers, they reported about that, like, oh, a Ripper letter was sent to the German Berlin police, and he said he's going to kill a woman next week at Alexanderplatz or whatever. So they reported about that as well. Yeah. And what I also found interesting, just on a side note, is the German translation to Jack would actually be Hans, but they didn't call him Hans der Aufschlitzer, they called him Jack der Aufschlitzer, which I found quite interesting in that case, yeah.
Thank you, Phil. So, where did you go for your source material, and what format was it in? Was it original newspapers that were still preserved, or microfilm, or all already all online? Or
I made it all up. I put it into ChatGPT. Can you write some articles for me that would sound like they were from back then? No, I looked. There's a very good online archive that's where they have all the newspapers, well, not all, but newspapers from the, I think, 17th century to today, where they are, you know, scanned, because they have the original papers. So I didn't have to go into any archives because it was all there. I could all do it from home, which was quite nice.
Just so I'm lacking details on this, but someone's going to be able to help me because I've forgotten. I think one of the earliest, but someone will correct me. I think one of the earliest pieces of writing on Jack the Ripper was something called the Devil of Whitechapel in the German language.
Yes, I forgot the author, but you're right. Yeah. Oh, it's good you mentioned it. I focus on newspapers, but I should have looked at next time.
What do we know about that?
Nothing, because I didn't look into it.
Right, so ask me next week, please.
Sure. Mark.
But I was also thinking that I've got a book somewhere called Scotland Yard, and in German, by a German author.
Did you enjoy it?
Published, sehr gut.
Good.
Alles schön. I can't remember the name of the author. The book I think is basically a rewrite of George Dillnott's book, which is also called Scotland Yard. But I showed it to Christian Yaut, because he's ich habe ein sehr gutes deutsches Akzent, I can't read German. So he had a look at it for me, and he found that was. So that book was published in sort of 20s, 30s, and I think there was an edition in the late 30s which mentioned the Whitechapel murders case and basically laid it all at the door of either late 30s or early 40s, laid it all at the door of Winston Churchill. So it was basically Churchill. This is where, to Katya's point about sort of how do the authorities fit into it, that was the narrative at the time. And then earlier editions and later editions of the same book took Churchill out of that and said it was no longer his fault. But at the time, that was the narrative they were running.
Yeah, I mean, it fits to. I think I read about this. I didn't read the book, but I read about this too. As you say, it fits the narrative of a certain how politics were at the time, how you viewed other countries, especially in the 20s and 30s in Germany. And yeah, so I can imagine. I must read that. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
So everyone.
One more.
Here we go.
The dog.
I think we get German eventually.
Baby. Lovely question. What was it that drew you?
What drew me to the case? But as I said, I typed the name Jack the Ripper into Google when I was 16. The idea came out of nowhere. I've always been interested in British literature, British culture, British music, everything British. So I don't know where this came from. It was an autumn day. I sat at our PC at home, our computer at home, typed Jack the Ripper into Google, and I ended up on the German website jacktheripper.de, run by Thomas Schaffner, but I kind of went down into the rabbit hole right away, and I thought, wow, this is interesting. And then this was my entrance into London history, if you like, because once I came here for the first time, I realized this is the place that I belong to. This is the my home. So that was interesting. It was like the starting point of a long journey that's not over yet, and has led me into London history and all things London, if you like.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
We have a break, a very brief break. We're back at 3 o'clock to listen to Mark. Thank you.
Raffle tickets are available here.
Raffle tickets are available.
And that was Philip Rodgers with Jack der Aufschlitzer, A German Perception of the Ripper Murders from 1888 to today. We are a podcast sponsored and hosted by casebook.org, where you will find hundreds of roundtable discussions author interviews, conference presentations, review shows, and so much more. All about Jack the Ripper, true crime, and Victorian history. If you have any questions or comments about this show, you can drop me a line at rippercastpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.